Are you passionate about resolving conflicts and making positive impact in the world? Then USD's Conflict Management and Resolution Master's Program may be for you. Learn to address conflicts at all levels, from personal disputes to global crises. Join the Kroc School's dedicated community fostering peace and understanding while you acquire practical skills to navigate diverse settings. Apply now and be the change you want to see in the world. Visit sandiego.edu/peace/VOSD. That's sandiego.edu/peace/VOSD. This podcast is brought to you in part by the estate of Bob Nelson. Bob was a lover of all things San Diego and a longtime supporter of Voice of San Diego and its podcasts. We at Voice of San Diego are honored to have his support during his lifetime and continued support through his estate planning. Join culture creator Ramel Wallace, museum CEO Micah Parzan, philanthropist Erwin Jacobs, and urban agriculturist Diane Moss on Season 2 of Stop and Talk, a podcast about the future of the San Diego region. How can we create a vibrant region that celebrates our cultural richness and economic strength? Find out and hear other San Diego experts on Stop and Talk. Discover seasons 1 and 2 now at stopandtalkpodcast.com. That's stopandtalkpodcast.com. Thanks for joining us for this Voice of San Diego podcast bonus episode. Last week, we had KPBS reporter Andrew Bowen on, talking about his new podcast, Freeway Exit, dedicated to the past, present, and future of freeways. I cut a shorter version of that conversation between Bowen and our editor, Andrew Keats, for last week's show. Now, I have for you a full, unabridged version of that conversation, where Bowen and Keats unleash their unbridled passion for freeways and transportation and public policy. They talk more about some of the archival footage and story shape for Bowen's podcast, how freeways emerged throughout the country, and freeway revolts. If you like our show, I think you'll like Freeway Exit too. It's a good chat. Enjoy.
We are now joined in the great Voice of San Diego podcast studio by KPBS reporter Andrew Bowen, making his second appearance on the show. In the studio, though. You're here now because you have a fantastic project, program,
new podcast. It's called a podcast.
Okay,
yeah.
It's a podcast.
I
don't know if you
like this thing that we're on.
It's
right
a show.
Now.
It's a new show have called Freeway Exit.
Yeah.
Right? It is a history of the creation and the protests against and the movement for and the funding of freeways in San Diego.
Mm-hmm. Past, present, and future. Past, yeah. That's sort of the tagline is. You know, there's a lot of forgotten history about our freeways. Most of us have come to San Diego after they were already built, and we kind of take for granted that a lot of those spaces used to be something else before those, well, all of them used to be something before they were built. But we don't know that history, and freeways are just at the center of so much of our political debates in San Diego around transportation and climate action and housing. So it just seemed like a real ripe topic for something, you know, a bit longer form than what we're used to from KPBS.
Yeah, we're also sort of getting into an era where, like, the creation of the freeways was long enough ago that even the older people in your life probably don't remember a time without them.
Yeah, absolutely.
Whereas, like, you know, in the 70s or 80s, there were people for whom the creation of a freeway was fresh. San Diego without them was in their memory bank, right? You know, there are fewer and fewer people around for whom that's the case.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's like the freeways, I mean, the first freeway in San Diego, and this is like right in episode one, the first freeway that ever came to San Diego was the 163. At the time, it was called the Cabrillo Parkway, and it started basically where more or less where the 8 intersects the 163 now, and it went down through Balboa Park to downtown. And so that was 1948 when it was built. But then it wasn't until the mid-50s, and we talk about this in episode two, after the passage of the Interstate and Defense Highways Act and this huge infusion of federal spending for freeways across the entire country, when we really start to see the freeway in San Diego take off and shape how our city is actually built.
Yeah. So the 163, I mean, the 163 is fascinating because it's part of a history of what we've done with freeways. It's also a part of a history of like what we've done to Balboa Park,
mm-hmm.
right? Like the for a place that calls that its crown jewel.
Yes,
I don't know that we that our actions are especially consistent with the moniker.
Yeah,
let's put a freeway.
There aren't many crown jewels that have that are cut up by a freeway.
Yeah.
That are in the flight path.
Right.
that have a landfill in them.
Yeah.
That are occupied with a bus maintenance yard or a city truck maintenance yard.
Mm-hmm.
Right. There's a lot of stuff that is like generally considered unwanted, like not in my backyard stuff.
Yes.
That somehow ended up directly in the center of our supposed crown jewel.
It's a crown jewel, but with character.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, one of my early memories in San Diego was hiking on the Bridal Trail when a friend of mine was visiting. And for anyone who doesn't know, the Bridal Trail goes right next to the freeway. It runs like right parallel to the freeway. And it's a really, just the contrast between the beautiful setting, the walls of the canyon, and, right now they're all covered in wildflowers. Mm-hmm. And the contrast between that and the feeling that you get just like standing right next to all of that traffic and the noise, just like not even being able to hear yourself think. I remember hiking that trail with friends and thinking, okay, I guess this is how San Diego does parks. and then, I think a lot of us in San Diego have had that moment where we see the pictures of Cabrillo Canyon before the freeway was built, yeah. with the lily pond under the Cabrillo Bridge. And, it's there is, I think, for a lot of us, a sense of loss of what the park used to be before so much of that space was taken over by cars.
And yet, you have this tidbit in the show. What was the vote in favor of the creation of the Cabrillo Freeway?
Yeah, it was in 1941. So people may know that there's a part of the city charter that requires a public vote for any dedication of any part of Balboa Park that's not parkland. So in order to give Caltrans, at the time they were called the California Division of Highways, in order to give them that space and to build the freeway, there had to be a public vote. And that happened in 1941, and it passed with 89% of the vote.
89%.
89% of San Diego voters said, yes, let's put a freeway through Balboa Park.
Could you think of something that could get 89% of the vote in San Diego right now?
No, literally nothing. No, not even nothing in my mind could I think of that many people would agree on. But, and we talk about this in the podcast, like, there was a real sense of that freeways were progress, that this is the future. And there, at the time, this was before World War II, but, in the aftermath and after the freeway was built, people had a lot of disposable income. They were buying cars in greater numbers. Mm-hmm. There was a greater appetite for people to have their own homes, not live in, close quarters anymore. So that's, why we ended up with all the suburban sprawl that we had here. And so, it's pretty crazy to think that, and if you were to ask someone if we were to imagine an alternate universe where the freeway was not built through Balboa Park and we were to have to hold that vote again today, how many people do you think would vote for it? I mean, I have no idea, but I know it's not 89%.
No. I mean, one of the things that struck me in that episode is you talk about there was like a common vision that this would be good for the growth of San Diego. This would be part of it becoming a bigger city, allowing it to punch alongside LA and San Francisco. We spend a lot of time debating about like whether there are good, like whether one idea or another is a good way to do that. But even before we get to the idea of like litigating any specific proposal, I don't think there's any shared vision now that we want to do that. I think there's like a group of people who would like San Diego to be bigger and to grow, to pursue more economic opportunity. But then there's like as much a group of people who are like, no, what we should do is stay like this, mm-hmm. stay as we are, or maybe even move backwards some, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's like, that's one of the sort of historical juxtapositions that I drew out of the show is like, oh, there was a time where there was a shared vision that San Diego could be bigger and more.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't tell you like which side has the majority.
I think that
it would take a lot of very sophisticated polling to figure out, how many people in San Diego want the city to grow and how many don't. But I think it doesn't really matter what people think because the city is growing and it will continue to grow and there's nothing that we can do to stop it. Mm-hmm. But bringing this back to freeways, I mean, the real conversation we have to ask ourselves to have in San Diego is, as we grow, are we going to continue to invest in the freeway? Mm-hmm. And or given all of the commitments that we've made around climate change and reducing our dependence on cars, is there an alternative where, you know, we can see a future where fewer people are driving, people live closer to work, live closer to all of the amenities that they need day to day, and don't need to drive on the freeways as often? Mm-hmm. Or if they do drive on the freeways, it's for a much shorter distance. Mm-hmm. And if that's the future that we can see, like, what do the freeways look like? Mm-hmm. How much space is left over? You know, the congestion that we experience, it's really only for a couple hours each day. Outside of that, the freeways are functioning very well at moving a lot of people very fast. But during those peak hours when there's a lot of demand to use the freeways all at the same time, that's when you experience congestion. And you know, people from Sandag will tell you, if we can reduce the number of cars on the freeways during peak hours by about 10%, we can get speeds back to normal. So if there is a future where we have excess capacity on our freeways, then what do we do with that excess capacity? Do we just keep it like a freeway because that's the best use of that public land? Mm-hmm. Or is there a future where we can imagine some other type of use for that land?
Well, so you have some proposals that you go through in the show, mm-hmm. that are not specifically, you know, new freeway expansion proposals, but freeway mitigation, freeway decommissioning, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. What are some of those ideas that you go through in the show?
Yeah, well, the first one we talk about is decommissioning the 163 through Balboa, yeah. Park. And this is an idea that circulates on Twitter every now and again. You might have seen at some point this Twitter account that generates images of streets and freeways without cars, you know, pedestrianized, mm-hmm. streets and everything. It's AI image generation. And they did that for the 163, showing this beautiful park with somebody biking and a, you know, a line of flowers under the Carrillo Bridge. And it really went viral. I think that says, you know, people are interested in imagining that future, even if they can't see it happening anytime soon. And so, you know, the most radical solution to that question, or the most radical answer to that question of what do we do with the excess capacity in this future where people are driving a lot less, the most radical answer is, let's decommission a freeway, just completely remove that from the network and do something else with that land. This has been done before. Like, it's, yeah. not something that is totally out of the question or that there is no roadmap for us to follow. Rochester, New York decommissioned their inner loop freeway. And built a boulevard. In episode 5, which is going to be dropping on Tuesday, so folks should, you know, subscribe now and listen to that when it drops. We're talking about the
Freeway exit available on all of your podcast platforms.
Wherever you listen to podcasts,
that's right.
So in San Francisco, after the 1989 earthquake, two freeways in the city were so severely damaged that the city decided it was prohibitively expensive to reconstruct them to a higher, mm-hmm. seismic standard. So they decommissioned those freeways and they redeveloped that land. And surprise, surprise, it's been a universally lauded success. We dig into in episode 5 into the concept of traffic evaporation, where when you reduce the capacity of a road network, it doesn't automatically just mean that traffic gets worse and stays that way. People adjust their behaviors according to the capacity that's available to them. Decommissioning is definitely the most radical idea. There are also ideas around lids, you know, freeway lids, which we have one already in City Heights, Terralta Park, which we talk about in episode 4. Mm-hmm. But there's also a proposal to build a lid over I-5 in Barrio Logan, which is arguably one of the most impacted communities in San Diego by freeways. Those are some of the ideas we talk about. Also,
Golden,
like,
Hill, I live in Golden Hill. There, yes, used to be, there was a,
the 94.
Yeah, there was a robust conversation for a while about, mm-hmm. a freeway lit over the 94, kind of stitch back together Golden Hill and Sherman Heights, which were at one point one community before, mm-hmm. before the creation of the 94. There's even been a discussion about downtown to Bankers Hill freeway caps on that S part curve, of the S curve. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the thing about freeway lids is that there's a lot of support for them because they're a very elegant and beautiful way to reconnect two sides of a freeway that have been divided. Mm-hmm. They're also, in most cases, prohibitively expensive.
Yeah.
They can cost up to $1 billion. And there's a program in the bipartisan infrastructure law called Reconnecting Communities, where the U.S. Department of Transportation is giving out grants to local and state governments in order to mitigate some, or you know, repair some of the harms that were done with the freeway boom of the mid-century, particularly in low-income communities of color. And that program has, I think, a little over $1 billion. So if they were to take, if they were to take all that money and dedicate it to one project,
one cap.
Yes. So, nice. So at the
please
same
be
time,
us,
that,
please be us,
right?
Fingers crossed.
I mean, and well, and they actually announced the first round of awards. There was an application for the freeway lid in Barrio Logan, and it was not given funding.
Okay.
And if you look at the number of projects that applied for that money versus the ones that were actually awarded it. There's just a huge gap. I mean, there's nowhere near enough resources to mitigate all of the damage that was done by freeways, and lids are not a scalable solution.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. I mean, it's just remarkable to think about. You know, you talk a lot about the role of the freeway throughout the country, not just here in San Diego, although your discussion of the history in San Diego goes very deep as well. But thinking about all the different places that would have submitted and been deemed more worthy than mm-hmm. Barrio Logan, which is like, you know, there's not really a more pat description mm-hmm. of environmental justice than the story of Barrio Logan, whether it's freeways mm-hmm. or zoning mm-hmm. or industry, it sort of hits all of the boxes. So to think that there could be other people out there who are submitting a measure that scores better.
Mm-hmm.
Even on the first round of funding,
yeah,
is sort of staggering if you just think about the size of the country and how many times that tragedy is playing out elsewhere.
Yeah, I think part of the issue is that, it's a brand new program. And so SANDAG was the agency that submitted that application. I think that they're probably still learning a little bit about what the Department of Transportation is looking for.
Mm-hmm.
I expect that if they do apply for another grant, that they'll maybe refine that application a little bit. But you're right. I mean, the need so far outstrips the demand, and the infrastructure law alone is just like kind of it's not nothing, but it's not, enough to actually fix all of our roads and all the other infrastructure mm-hmm. that that bill is supposed to spend money on. I also I want to mention that Caltrans has its own Reconnecting Communities companion program,
mm-hmm.
And they're calling it Highways to Boulevards. So they're actually asking local jurisdictions to give them ideas about how to decommission a freeway and turn it into a boulevard. And, we haven't seen the first round of grants in that application, but this is something that I don't think San Diego is really thinking about.
Mm-hmm.
Where is a freeway that we could actually get rid of?
Yeah. Have you thought this through? Because you have an idea?
Is there a freeway you want to get rid
yeah.
of?
Well, okay.
I'm not asking you to like take a position and say we should do this, but I mean like I'm just running through my head what would be fitting.
Yeah. So I don't want to give away episode 6.
Okay.
But I can tell, because I want folks to listen,
uh-huh.
but I can tell you that there is a freeway removal project in San Diego that has already won unanimous support from the city council and the mayor. And
okay.
and I'm guessing that you don't know where it is.
Can you tell me what year that
2015.
Okay.
2015. It really flew below the radar. But it is, and I've talked to a lot of people in city government about this particular project or idea.
Yeah.
And no one has ever heard of it.
Huh.
And it's basically just one of those cases where it's kind of tucked away in a planning document somewhere. And there was never really a serious conversation about how to make it happen.
Hmm.
And it's just been collecting dust ever since.
That sounds familiar. With
Are you
the,
thinking
the,
of all the freeways?
I'm running through my mental inventory. I'm trying
okay,
to think
I'll,
of
I'll just say it's one. Not a full freeway. It is a okay. section or a portion of a freeway.
Okay, great. All right. Well, that's good stuff. So now that you have a wonderful history that, and this was episode 3 was dear to my heart. I think Southcrest is a very fascinating community here in San Diego.
Yeah.
That it's sort of a picture of a lot of different problems that San Diego has all in one place. And it also has this history that you go through of a community defeating a freeway proposal. Mm-hmm. There was, long and short of it, there was supposed to be a freeway between the 5 and the 805 that was going to be a straight line directly through the Southcrest community.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was curious, like, if, I mean, you've been in San Diego longer than I have. Had you heard this history before?
I have. I did some reporting on this. I never actually, it never turned into a story.
Right.
But you'll have to take my word for it.
No, I believe you.
I've been to the area where the freeway was going to be and is now a big dirt mound, basically along the riverbed there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
On the other side of where all the housing that SEDC built.
Yeah, I mean, I was surprised by how few people were aware of this history, because to me it seems like just an amazing story of what people in San Diego were able to accomplish. But yeah, so the 252 would have been between the 5 and 805. The agreement between the city and the State Division of Highways was signed in 1968. So that was basically because freeways have to use city right-of-way, there has to be some cooperation between the city and the state. And so this sailed through the city council with 90 seconds of discussion. I actually found the old tape,
I was extremely impressed by that. Where did you find that?
Oh my gosh. This is a whole other story or whole other conversation, but there are like reel to reel tapes in the city clerk's archives.
Oh man. That's awesome.
And there's one reel to reel tape player at the La Jolla Library. You have to book an appointment with a volunteer who will digitize that audio for you, but it's recorded in double speed and sometimes it's actually backwards. So there's a lot of trial and error, and I was basically like listening.
Sergeant Peppers.
Yeah, I was listening to with the headphones, trying to pick out some keywords, following along with the minutes of the meeting, which are very sparse. But anyway, so this agreement was signed in 1968. 1969 is when Leon Williams becomes the first Black city council member in San Diego, and he represents Southcrest. And so as the state starts seizing property in Southcrest to build the freeway using eminent domain, people really start getting worked up about this. And so he had put a lot of time and effort into organizing that community and trying to get folks empowered to feel like they actually have a voice at City Hall. And so that started then this grassroots campaign in order to tell the state, no, we don't want a freeway here. We don't need a freeway here. And think about alternatives and think about the consequences of actually building this freeway, not just the consequences on the people who live there, not just the people who are displaced from that community, but the people who continue to live there, mm-hmm. all of the businesses in that area. Think of the consequences on our property tax rolls and our sales tax. You know, like they literally tore down all of this land that was producing value for us, you know, for taxpayers.
You know, I mean, look, if you get some of the history of other freeways that people tell, and some of this is word of mouth, sort of oral history type stuff. I don't know how true all of it is, but you talk to people about like the history of North Park. Mm-hmm. It's like that was a thriving business district, and then they built the 8 and Mission Valley, and it stopped being a thriving business district because they could build them bigger and you know, more plentiful down. And so the university used to be filled with department stores,
mm-hmm.
and then the department stores moved to Mission Valley, and like
yeah.
all of that sort of like winners and losers, and you know, the consequences of actions of any of these decisions seemed largely outside of the discussion for 30 years, 40 years, you know, roughly around and up until the point that you're discussing about when the residents of Southcrest stood up, which was part of a trend statewide.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of forgotten history, and you're right, the campaign against Highway 252 was part of a much larger movement that historians called the Highway Revolts or the Freeway Revolts. Mm-hmm. There was another case of San Diegans protesting the widening of the 163 through Balboa Park and, trying to prevent a lot of the trees along that freeway from being cut down so that we could accommodate more vehicles there. But you know, the 252 is, I mean, there were protests against freeways in San Diego that were not successful. But I think the 252 is a really beautiful example of what all of the land that we devote to freeways in our inner city could be used for if they weren't freeways. So after Caltrans was ordered for the second time by the California Transportation Commission to abandon this project, don't build the freeway, stop planning it, and give that land back, sell the land back to the city. After that happened, there was, I mean, we won't go into the stories of the redevelopment agencies and some of the funny business that was going on there, particularly with the one that handled all of this redevelopment in South Crest.
Yes, but, and this project is specifically. It's a ripe vein, the whole area. Yes. There's a lot of urban history right there.
So much to talk about. But, but you know, if you look at that neighborhood today, we start episode 3 at Cesar Chavez Elementary School, where there are kids learning, playing on the playgrounds. You know, they were parents going to pick them up on foot. This is a walkable community.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of housing that was built. There were parks. And I think, you know, when we're thinking about food deserts and a lot of these communities that don't have access to fresh foods, because that freeway was not built, South Crest got its own grocery store and the first grocery store in that community in more than 30 years when it was built. So there's a lot of, I think that case study kind of shows San Diegans, or I hope it will allow San Diegans to imagine, okay, if this freeway were not here, maybe I would have to take a different route to work, or maybe it would take me a little bit longer to drive somewhere. But what would we get in return? What is the opportunity that comes with decommissioning a freeway? And if we were to make that choice, how could we as a community have a conversation about what we want out of it?
So the you have this comment in the there's the first meeting you find with the 90 seconds into a unanimous vote. And then you have the second meeting where the city council rejects it, and there's, you know, they pack the house with volunteers. Mm. Including one person who may be a surprise. I would imagine it. Your ears perked up when this person identified themselves.
Yeah.
But it was the head of the San Diego Chamber of Commerce,
right?
Who spoke against the freeway project, not for the freeway project, with a pretty modern argument, I guess I would say.
Yeah, I think so. It was actually the California Transportation Commission meeting, the city council actually revoked its support for the freeway in 1978. That is one meeting that I didn't have the time to find on those reel to reel tapes, but it's out there.
Yeah.
So the CTC held their meeting in Ontario, several hundred, you know, more than 100 miles outside of San Diego. So they chartered buses to bring people who live in this community up to this meeting so that they could testify in person and tell these state policymakers why building the freeway was not necessary. So yes, it's a packed room. There's poster boards showing alternatives. And I think because of this grassroots organizing that at this point had been taking place for more than 15 years, and all of the winning over of hearts and minds of the folks who often see themselves as the ones who get to decide what happens and what doesn't. The president of the Chamber of Commerce, Mike Madigan, spoke before the CTC, and he said, there was a commissioner who asked him, so what about National City? National City wants this freeway built because they're afraid that if we don't build the freeway, all of their local streets are going to be overwhelmed with traffic, and they're going to have to widen their local streets to accommodate that traffic. And they're left, you know, paying the bill for the development that's occurring in other communities. And his response was, if we allow South Crest and Southeast San Diego at large to develop their own commercial corridors, give these people opportunities to have their own businesses in their own communities, you're not going to add traffic to the freeway system. You're going to take it off the freeway system. If you can drive a half a mile or a mile or a mile and a half to a grocery store and never get on a freeway, that trip, whereas previously you had to drive to a different neighborhood in another community in order to get your groceries, that's a trip that's never happening, that it just disappears because you have access to your daily needs within the community. And this was a very progressive argument at the time, certainly for an organization like the Chamber of Commerce to be making. But it's also a conversation that we're still having in San Diego.
Yeah. I mean, I think that was part of what struck me, because on the one hand, it's very progressive to be thinking in those terms. And from a transportation perspective, you know, I think that's what you would expect to hear from, like, that's the type of thought that journalists go to think tanks to get now, right? On the other hand, it was like a little bit heartbreaking to me, because the truth is that Southcrest doesn't have thriving commercial corridors right now.
Mm-hmm.
Southcrest didn't, you know, for other reasons. It's not, I'm not suggesting they would be better off if the freeway had been built, but the freeway wasn't built, and then the city didn't invest in Southcrest and didn't provide a thriving walkable community, even one comparable to other underserved communities like Barrio Logan or City Heights nearby, or even National City. You know, there is a grocery store there, and you know there are, you know, Cherokee has, it's like 90% of teachers at Cherokee are experienced. So, you know, there are community assets in Southcrest by all means. But if you know if you drive through their commercial corridors, they didn't get the economic activity that you would have expected. And so hearing the awareness that, you know, influential people had for what was potentially a benefit of keeping out this and then not seeing the follow through and going through Southcrest and saying, you know, the truth is Southcrest remains as underserved a community as we have in San Diego. I just think of it, you know, I guess the best way to put it would be a missed opportunity.
Yeah. I mean, Southcrest is by no means alone in that regard. Mm-hmm. But you know, what was happening at the time in the 60s and 70s, well, 50s, 60s and 70s, as San Diego was really investing in suburban sprawl. And the reason actually for the 252, why Caltrans or this division of highways wanted to build the 252, was they were developing a lot of these suburban style communities to the east, Bay Terraces and Encanto, these communities that
Paradise Hills.
The argument was they needed a freeway to get them directly to downtown, to the job centers. And so setting the freeway aside, even before that was happening, the community of Southcrest was already being neglected because the suburbs and the suburbs that San Diego was building within its own borders were where all of the focus was. This was the area of an era of white flight where, you know, people were leaving the cities, the older communities. And this was where, you know, the newer communities were where San Diego was investing its public money and you know where they were giving it the attention. And so this is actually and this sort of turned into a feedback loop where there was disinvestment in these more urban older communities, and that in turn devalued the property. And so when the state was looking for where to build their freeways, the freeways with the lowest land costs were the easiest targets. And this was the case with Southcrest. It was the case with Barrio Logan and National City. And a lot of these communities of color that were really left with really devastating consequences, you know, in the cases where they were not able to stop the freeway.
And so, and you sort of talk about what seemed to me like a unintended consequences. Maybe that's overly kind to the sort of planners who put these things in place. But the federal government, in its pursuit of the highway system, didn't seem to envision what was going to happen locally.
Mm-hmm.
They were looking at a map of a 50-state United States and thinking, how can we connect
cities to each other. Yes.
And didn't give as much thought to what would happen in the cities with the freeway.
Right.
And so you could tell us a little bit about the people who aren't quite so innocent in that story. But basically, the federal government expected freeways to bypass cities, and then you would go very far, very fast, and then you'd get off and do some local roads. But the other people said, no, why don't we put this thing right down through the middle?
Yeah, I wouldn't say it was the federal government so much as it was President Eisenhower.
Okay.
So Eisenhower was a champion of the freeway system. He led the charge to pass the Interstate and Defense Highways Act in 1956. And just briefly, I'll say that part of the reason he was so interested in this is that in 1919, when he was in the military, he was part of what was called the Transcontinental Motor Convoy, where they took a battalion from Washington, D.C., decided that we're going to have them drive across the country to San Francisco, and we're going to use this as an experiment to see how ready are we for another war, because World War One had just ended. How ready is our infrastructure for that? And it was a total disaster. They got stuck in mud. They averaged 5 miles per hour as people, you know, if you exclude rest breaks, they were traveling 5 miles an hour across the entire country. So he was really scarred by that experience and brought that drive for a better road system to his presidency. The thing is, he was not anticipating, and he saw the freeway system as a means of moving troops, of connecting cities to each other across long distances, but he never intended for
moving
it to
freight.
Yes, but he never intended for it to lead to suburban sprawl.
Yeah.
This is something that people had told me in many different interviews that I had been doing for this, but I was never able to find a primary source for it until somebody sent me this law review article from the 70s where they actually looked into what Eisenhower wanted out of the interstate system. And he had actually commissioned a study in the 50s that was asking, how can we kind of pump the brakes on this freeway building? Because he was watching a lot of these neighborhoods get demolished and was really not really thrilled about it. There were other folks in the federal government or in his administration who were also looking at how much money the federal government was spending. Mm-hmm. And the urban neighborhoods were the most expensive freeways to build. I mean, if you're building a freeway in the middle of nowhere, that's pretty cheap land. But if you're building it through downtown San Diego, you're going to have to pay a really hefty price for that land. And not to mention the engineering costs and everything. And this is all before CEQA. So, it would be much more expensive today. He tried to sort of steer things in a slightly different direction. But by the time he had really managed to come up with an alternative, the train had left the station. There was and also the other element here is that Congress had been lobbied by the freeway lobby. The contractors who were building the freeways, the developers who were able to access new land tracts to build their, to build homes, and labor,
which literally wouldn't have been feasible if not for the freeways. It wouldn't have even been an option to build 45 minutes from the city center a new tract of single family homes, which the attraction of a bigger house and a bigger yard would have been there already, mm-hmm. but no one wants to spend 3 hours going to work, right?
Yeah.
But if you can turn it into a 20-minute trip, well, now all of a sudden all this stuff's unlocked.
Yeah, exactly. And so, by the time he had tried, the solutions that this policy paper that he had commissioned were make some more of the freeways toll roads so that they're paying for themselves.
Familiar.
And right. And, we can't imagine us talking about that in San Diego.
It's like, what about if you'd had like a transponder that could track mileage instead of using a gas mile?
Oh, now, like, now you're talking socialism, yeah. Andy. The idea was build more toll roads and also reroute some of these freeways. We don't have to build them necessarily through downtown. Mm-hmm. So if you want to drive from San Diego to Seattle, you could still make that drive without ever hitting a stoplight, but it's never going to take you through downtown San Francisco.
Yeah.
And so, that was his alternative. But by the time these ideas were being discussed in this very small corner of his administration, he had less than a year in office. So the history just kind of continued and we have the system we have now.
So when we talk about decommissioning or we try to like just optimistically look forward to what's possible, right? You paint a clear picture about sort of the environmental costs, the social costs, and infrastructure costs, the financial costs, right? But removing any of these things and you talk about how the systems have been put in place now, the bureaucracy has been put in place, that what allowed the freeway system to be built as quickly and as cheaply as it is mm-hmm. totally different now.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's a good thing if you don't think that there should be more freeways. It's much more expensive, but it also prevents building transit very cheaply or other alternatives. what I think is most profound is that it would also, that entire system would also make it really hard to remove a freeway.
Mm-hmm.
The life cycle of a freeway is that it got all the benefit of being built
mm-hmm.
in a pre-sequel world, in a pre-many levels of checks and balances and regulatory structures.
Mm-hmm.
But removing it would have to come after all of those things. And you would have to have an onerous CEQA analysis
yeah.
on the environmental effects of not having a freeway.
Right.
And all the community response that I imagine would make it very difficult to remove a freeway right now.
Yeah.
What is your thought about the realistic possibility in San Diego? Even if somebody decided they wanted to mm-hmm. to remove that, what it would take?
So yeah, this is a fundamental flaw in CEQA is that it always assumes that the status quo is the environmentally superior alternative.
Right.
And so yeah, I mean, could it ever happen in San Diego? Like I mentioned, there is already a project that won approval from the city council to remove a very small section of one freeway. Or of the freeway
when
network,
you
say
I'll that, say. Like, would that require, I mean, did they do a CEQA analysis for that?
No.
Okay.
It never got that far. It has not crossed that bridge yet. But could an entire section of a freeway be removed in San Diego? And what would it take to get there? I don't know. Clearly now in this moment, in this political moment, and, you know, listening to the discussions that are happening at SANDAG, I don't think it's likely anytime soon. But what I really wanted to accomplish with this podcast is to spark people's imagination, you know, that if we cannot even imagine a future where we have achieved the goals that we've set for ourselves, then aren't we just setting ourselves up for failure? And I just had the opportunity to give a presentation on this podcast to my colleagues at KPBS, and we're going to be having an event on June 10th about the future of transportation in San Diego and what the role of the freeway plays in that. And, you know, what I told everyone is I hope that when we're older, we have the opportunity to look at our children in the eyes and tell them we did everything in our power to make the planet more livable for them and for their children. And the reality, the fact of the matter is we cannot accomplish the vision of the Paris Climate Accords, which is what scientists tell us needs to happen in order for us to prevent the worst impacts of climate change. We cannot achieve those goals of net zero emissions by mid-century without driving a lot less. And, you know, Our role as journalists, I don't think, is to advocate for one policy solution over another, but it is our role to have to be fostering a conversation that is grounded in reality and grounded in facts. And there have been a lot of smart people who have done a lot of very sophisticated math that has found electric vehicles are not going to solve all of our problems. We also need to be driving a lot less, reducing our vehicle miles traveled. That is just the simple fact. And I hope that folks will just accept that, you know, that if they listen to this podcast and they really think about what kind of future we want to build in San Diego, that they acknowledge that, you know, these are conversations that we need to be having. Mm-hmm. Even if we're not talking about decommissioning a freeway, we still need to be talking about what we're going to do to reduce people's dependence on their cars. There are going to be gas-powered vehicles that are still on the road well past our deadline of net zero emissions by 2035 in San Diego, which is what the Climate Action Plan, you know, aims for.
I did find it funny. I was just thinking about, like, if tomorrow the city council voted to decommission the five, could they get it offline by 2035?
No. Definitely not. No.
Definitely not, right?
I mean,
that's just getting that one thing done,
yeah.
Right?
Well,
by the time that we already need to be at net zero.
Let me amend my answer and say that under the status quo of the system that we set up for ourselves, no, they couldn't do that. But all of these rules are things that we've imposed upon ourselves.
Yeah.
And so, you know, from an engineering perspective, absolutely we could get that done by 2035. We would just have to.
From an engineering perspective, you just put up some cones by all the ramps and just
they're gonna
keep
be doing
there.
They're gonna be doing they're gonna be doing that on the 163 in a couple of weeks for the Rock and Roll Marathon. The northbound lanes of the 163 through Balboa Park are shut down so that, you know, the folks who are running the marathon can use that space. And this, I'm giving away a bit of episode six, but there was a few in March. Caltrans shut down a section of SR-15 and invited people to walk on it and bike on it while they were doing road maintenance on the other half of the freeway. And it was one of the most inspiring events or you know, like experiences that I have ever had, because you are, you know, most of us drive on the freeways in San Diego, if not every day, at least every week or fairly often. But every time, and so we think that we know these spaces very well, but we've never experienced them outside of a car. We're always looking at all of these spaces through the windshield. And when you have the opportunity to stand on a freeway and to observe, you know, smell the smells, listen to the sounds. I mean, I heard birds chirping mm-hmm. on the freeway. And it's just like you really get a sense of what we lost when we built all of this infrastructure. Mm-hmm. And also what could be our future if we choose to take that path, or you know, if we don't decommission a freeway, maybe we shrink it down in size a little bit. Mm-hmm. But there is you know, I think that honestly, if we're talking about what is the more immediate ideas, or what are some of the more shorter term ideas that we could start talking about in order to reimagine all of this land that we have. A temporary freeway closure is actually a really interesting thing that I think we should be talking about, and that Caltrans seems to have an appetite for, because I think they're conscious of the impact that their infrastructure has had on a lot of these communities. And
they have written into their planning documents these days, right? Like the principles of induced demand are like
sure.
now fully embraced, right? Like in their official documentation, sort of like the history of environmental racism. It's not like just the thoughts of like outside of government progressives anymore.
Right, right. And so I think that, you know, having maybe a temporary closure of a freeway so that folks can experience it in a different way, it allows folks to, I think it sparks some imagination, but it also allows people to feel like they actually have an ownership over this space. It is public land. It is owned by the government, which is controlled by us, the people. And so, you know, when you have the chance to really stay in that space outside of a car, not be moving through it, but to actually be there, you know, you see it differently. And there were families that were picking up trash. There were kids who were biking around, having like the best time of their lives. You know, it was a really, really beautiful moment. And frankly, a lot of the Caltrans staff were actually at this event and they saw all of that happening. So I'm curious to see, you know, whether that has a trickle down effect into you know, how Caltrans approaches their responsibilities with this infrastructure, because folks, I think there's clearly an appetite for people to experience that space in a different way.
That was KPBS reporter Andrew Bowen talking to Andrew Keats. We'll be back on Friday, as usual, with our weekly roundup of news with Scott, Andy, and Andrea. Andrew Keats is managing editor at Voice of San Diego. Andrea Lopez Villafania is also managing editor at Voice of San Diego. Scott Lewis is our CEO and editor-in-chief. I'm Nate John, producer for the show. Thanks for listening. Talk soon.